What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show. It's me, your man, MG, Marcus Grant, fully vaccinated, still dodging variants like Neo in the Matrix. You know the whole deal, yada, yada, yada. Well, I know it is still summer in most of the country and most of the Northern Hemisphere, but for us, it's fall. It is officially fall. We are through 2 weeks of the preseason. We got one more week left, and we're a couple weeks away from the regular season starting. By the way, welcome to the show. Probably should have said that earlier. We got producer Justin alongside, and I'm so excited because the band is back together. Michael F. Florio has come back from his extended wanderings through the wilderness and is now back with us twice a week through the rest of the season. Florio, it's wonderful to have the band back together, man. How have you been in the last, I'd say a couple months since I've talked to you since then, but the last couple months since you've been on this show?
I've been good. I'm super excited to be back. The long summer is over. I've been doing a lot of stuff to kill time, Marcus. I've played a lot of Madden recently. I've played more basketball the last couple of months than in probably the last few years. But I'm happy to be back and just talking some football. This is what I love to do. So just happy that the band is back together, like you said.
Yeah, man, it's great. I know you've been still doing the SiriusXM stuff, so I'm yanking you away from Scott Engel. I know he's the king. He's been doing it for a long time. But Scott, you'll be fine. We're bringing Florio back into the fold here. Plenty of stuff to talk about. Although you and I spent the 5 or 10 minutes before we started this show talking about baseball and the Mets and the Dodgers and the like. I don't think you really want to talk about that right now.
Yeah, they're just going in very different directions. It's much more enjoyable to be a Dodger fan right now.
You know, it's weird because we talked about this back in the spring. Like, things were looking up for the Mets, and it just suddenly fell apart.
They became the Mets again. They realized, hey, we are the Mets. We cannot have good things happen to us.
That's kind of what happened, unfortunately. All right. I guess speaking of not being able to have good things happen to them, that leads us to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who played on Monday night their second preseason game, this one against the New Orleans Saints. On the scoreboard, it was a narrow loss, 23-21. If you watched any part of the game, it certainly did not feel that close. But the biggest news maybe coming out of that is that rookie running back Travis Etienne suffered a Lisfranc injury. He was seen on a walking boot at the end of the night, was in quite a bit of pain, apparently. So my question to you is not so much about James Robinson, because obviously that's going to be the pivot for everybody now that Etienne is out for who knows how long. But the question becomes then, whither Carlos Hyde? Do you have any interest? Do you dare take any shots at Carlos Hyde now that it looks like sort of a two-man backfield for the foreseeable future?
I think Carlos Hyde is going to have a role. I mean, he's been in each of the preseason games, he has been the second running back to come into the game ahead of Travis Etienne. And in fact, he has two targets this preseason. James Robinson doesn't have any, which is a little concerning there. But I'll say, I don't anticipate myself drafting much Carlos Hyde, maybe in deeper leagues or as the James Robinson handcuff. But outside of that, I don't think he gets enough work to be like a flex option on a weekly basis. And this is a team that, while I think they're going to try to run the ball more than they did last year, I still expect them to pass a lot because they're just going to be trailing in games, as we saw yesterday.
I'm with you that I don't really have the stomach to try and draft Carlos Hyde in a whole lot of spots. But you brought up an interesting point, and it's something you and I talked about, was that he was getting a lot of work in the preseason. The fact that you mentioned he was the second running back on the field last night, it was Robinson getting the start, then it was Carlos Hyde, and then Etienne. After Etienne got hurt, we saw a lot more Hyde kind of filling in the gaps. I had been under the belief this whole offseason that Urban Meyer was basically throwing up smoke screens when he said Carlos Hyde was going to work in, that Robinson and Hyde were going to be their first and second down backs and Etienne as the third down back. I didn't really believe it, but he has sort of operated that way in the preseason. Now, obviously, it's down to kind of two guys there. I'm still sort of, waving the flag for James Robinson like I have been this whole offseason. But, at some point, you got to kind of believe that maybe Hyde was going to have a role and it was going to be a three-headed rotation. We'll never know that, not anytime soon. But I'm starting to kind of wonder. The other part is, Florio, watching the Jaguars the first 2 weeks, My one takeaway is that offense looks hard for them. Like, it looks difficult, right? And we saw, hey, look, the Saints have some players on defense. Like, I don't want to take anything away from them, but it just looks really difficult. And so all this sort of intrigue I think we had with, you know, the Chenaults and the Joneses and the DJ Charks, are you starting to get a little bit concerned about some of those guys just because the offense looks like it's so lost right now?
Yeah, especially when I tell you that my most drafted quarterback this year is Trevor Lawrence so far. I'm a little bit worried. I have a ton of Marvin Jones. I don't see myself shying away from Jones just because he's pretty cheap. You could get him in like the 9th or 10th round. And I think that he very well could lead this team in receiving yards and touchdowns this year. I don't think that any one of the three has really taken a step ahead of the other two yet. But my biggest concern right now is the blocking for Trevor Lawrence. Like, yes, I get that, especially up front, the Saints defense is really good, and they're one of the better defensive units in the league. But yeah, it looked pretty rough yesterday. Lawrence did show flashes, right? Like, he had that one throw that he made from the end zone where he was running through across the body, and it was a dart to Laviska Shenault. But I'm still worried about, can they protect this guy? Because he took a lot of hits, and I keep saying he can add points with his legs, and he showed us yesterday, like, hey, he can run, and I expect him to run near the goal line at times as well, too. But if you can't block for him and he's taking big hits, it puts him at a higher risk of getting hurt. And if he gets hurt, we know this offense is just going to crash. We saw last year what it could look like with Gardner Minshew or others at the helm, and it wasn't pretty. So I'm still feeling pretty optimistic about Lawrence and the receivers, but I will admit that optimism has been lowered after watching the first two preseason games.
Yeah, I'm sort of feeling the same way. My only hope is that we'll see guys, you mentioned Marvin Jones and the draft value being relatively cheap. You know, Laviska Shenault, I expect that, you know, his ADP is going to drop a few slots. And even guys like James Robinson, I mean, I know he's going to be more popular, but I wonder if people are going to just generally kind of shy away from the Jaguars offense and just kind of be hands off, in which case I'll take the discount on James Robinson if it comes in the next couple of weeks.
Are you thinking Robinson RB1 or RB2? Because I'm thinking more as an RB2.
Oh, he's an RB2. Yeah, no. I'm not thinking he will be the Jaguars RB1, but no, for fantasy, he's an RB2 for sure. Which, by the way, I know people were saying that, like, you know, anybody who was drafting James Robinson was using bad process. I guess that's the thought going out there. Maybe I was, but I just never believed that he was going away in this offense. I thought he would share time, but that's it.
To give you credit, Marcus, you were the first person, like, back in like December or January, it was, I think you were the first person saying, like, everything went right for James Robinson this year. He is not going to be this way next year. And I think even with ETN gone, like, Carlos Hyde is a bigger threat than anything Robinson had to deal with last season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there was no competition last year. There was always going to be competition this year. Like I said, I didn't think they were going to go out and draft one of the three best running backs in the draft class. I didn't predict that happening, but I thought there was going to be competition. So I guess in that respect, that's why I always felt okay drafting Robinson where I did, because it sort of looks like the way I thought it would look to some extent. All right. In Chicago, we have been waiting with bated breath to see what Matt Nagy was going to do with his quarterback spot. Of course, everybody wants to see Justin Fields. He is, you know, the new local hero there in the Windy City. And Matt Nagy, because he wants to crush the hopes and dreams of Bears fans everywhere, has said that Andy Dalton is going to be his starter in Week 1. To his credit, he has sort of been holding this line for a while. You know, I don't know if it's that he doesn't want to run his rookie out there against Aaron Donald and the Rams in Week 1, especially after seeing Justin Fields take a wicked shot over the weekend. Maybe that really sort of solidified that. But I think we're all agreed that at some point Justin Fields is going to start. How long do you think it will be? And does that affect when and how you're drafting him?
Yeah, I'm drafting Justin Fields is a, if I miss out on the elite quarterbacks, I tend to grab, you know, like a lower end QB1 and then a high upside QB2. And Justin Fields is like him, Tua Tagovailoa, Trey Lance. Those are kind of like the high upside twos. You can put Trevor Lawrence in there if he doesn't go as a QB1. Those are the guys that I'm kind of chasing as my second quarterback. I continue for months. I know it's a popular thought, but I continue to think Week 2 against the Bengals is when Justin Fields makes his first start. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I think Justin Fields missing that free rusher and taking that absolute shot was all that Nagy had to see to be like, yeah, I don't want that shot coming from Aaron Donald, the biggest dude in the NFL. I don't want him ending Justin Fields' career before it even starts. So I think, though, that this could be like a Tom Savage, Deshaun Watson situation where Dalton gets the start. And if it's looking pretty bad, we could see Fields come in at some point in the second half of this game. But the reason I continue to think week two is because the Bears get a stretch after this Rams game where they face the Bengals, Browns, Lions, and Raiders. Then they get a stretch against the Packers, Bucks, Niners, Steelers, a bye week, and the Ravens. That is such a tough stretch against defenses there. I don't think you want to throw Justin Fields into the fire then. I think you want him to have a month worth of starts against easier defenses, and then you could kind of ease him into this really tough stretch that is going to decide the Bears' season, in my opinion. And this is a Bears coach and front office that they need to start winning. And I know they made the playoffs last year, but they need to turn things around. They could be playing for their jobs. I don't think you're going to want to go down with Andy Dalton.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I'm being a little more conservative here, and I'm going to say week four, just because. So you've got that Rams game, the Bengals game. Why not let Andy Dalton have a shot against his old team, right? Let him you know, get his revenge game in against the Bengals in week two. Then in week three, just like you don't really want Justin Fields having to duck Aaron Donald, I don't know that I want him running from Myles Garrett either. So maybe I let him. But then in week four, it's the Lions. And then in week five, it's the Raiders. So that's my goal. My guess right now is that week four, we see him. And so that way they ease him in. And then, as you mentioned, that's just a brutal gauntlet, though, with, you know, Packers, Bucks, Niners, Steelers, Ravens. I mean, that's brutal. So I think they can get him ready for that.
The one thing about Fields, too, that I just said I love him and I've been targeting him because we've seen it in the preseason, Marcus. This guy can just run with the best of them. And I think he's a better passer than like a Jalen Hurts or a Trey Lance. So I think his ceiling is a little bit higher than those guys. I know that could be a little hot takey. Everyone loves Trey Lance right now. But that middle stretch of the season, like, are you going to feel confident starting Fields against the Bucks, Niners, Steelers, and Ravens?
No.
That's the one thing giving me a little bit of pause.
Yeah, no, I get that. Side note to that, is it weird that Justin Fields and Trey Lance, who we are pretty certain aren't going to be starters in week one, they're going ahead of a lot of guys that we know are going to start? I mean, like, they're going ahead of guys like, you know, say what you want about Kirk Cousins and you know, his on-field performance being sort of inconsistent. We know he's a starter. Tua Tagovailoa, we know he's a starter. Ben Roethlisberger, these are guys that are all going to start week one. But people are taking shots at Lance and Fields when we don't really have an idea when they're going to be the starter. That feels a little bit weird to me.
It is. I think there's a shift in thinking the last couple of years in fantasy football, and I'm guilty of it myself. Like, I used to target safer players, and now I do the exact opposite, right? Like, I go for upside, and the rushing quarterbacks we know, Marcus, have more upside than quarterbacks who don't run. But I also think there's been a change of thinking, and again, I am one of these people myself. I don't care. Like, there used to be a narrative like you want to start the season off well, and some people still abide by that. To me, I want to finish hot, right? Like, because how many times do you see the number one seed get bounced in the first week of the playoffs or something like that? And you see a team could sneak in as a sixth seed to get hot and win it all. So for me, I want these players who I think at the end of the year could really push me over the top and win me a championship. And I think that a lot of people have kind of changed their thinking to do that. And I think part of it is a little bit of a best ball influence with it getting more and more popular. I think people are just thinking now highest upside and not so much about like early season safety.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. It was just a thing that I've noticed and was just kind of, you know, wondering when this happened and why, but I think that makes as much sense as pretty much anything. Some positive news out of New York. Saquon Barkley is taking part in team drills. We have sort of been monitoring his recovery all offseason long. Seems like things are heading in a positive direction. What is your concern level? Is it less? Is it more? I mean, how are you feeling about Saquon at this point?
I still kind of feel the same that I have for the last few weeks. Like, I'm not going to take him in the middle of the first round like we had seen him going like in early drafts this summer. But I think in like the middle to the late part of the first round, like I have him behind Jonathan Taylor still, but like once like Zeke and Taylor are kind of all, and Aaron Jones are off the board, I'm fine taking Saquon there, whether that be like picks 9, 10, or 11, 12, something like that. Because again, my thinking is maybe he's slow to start the season. And even like slow for Saquon Barkley could be, you know, 12 to 15 touches. He could still put up 20 fantasy points on 12 to 15 touches. He is that explosive. But if, you know, come the middle and end of the season, if he is the Saquon Barkley of old getting 20 touches a game, that is a guy who could win you your league. So I am still fine taking him in the middle to the late part of the first round.
Who do you think has bigger question marks, Saquon or Zeke? Because I feel like both of them, people are sort of hesitant on.
I'll say Saquon because his is injury related. And to me, I think injury is always a little bit riskier. But I'm glad you brought this up because I've felt for a while this summer that like I've warmed up to Zeke, you know, especially watching him rap gifts and stuff on Hard Knocks. It's been fun. But I'm for a while, like I felt like I was the only one being like, Zeke, really, his efficiency has taken a hit the last couple of years, even with Dak. And Tony Pollard is a really good backup. But it felt like for most of the fantasy community, they were just like, Zeke is going to be awesome with Dak again.
Yeah, I don't know. I've sensed a little bit of hesitancy. And for me, just one, the offense becoming more Dak focused, understandably. And as you mentioned, Tony Pollard, man, it just seems like the Cowboys like him and want to work him in more. Not enough that, you know, not enough that Zeke should fall out of the first round, but enough that, you know, I'm definitely not feeling comfortable just plugging him in immediately in my top five anymore. So,
and we're almost fully back to him being like a top five lock again. Like very rarely does he not go in the top five.
Right. I mean, you know, it's just weird. I feel like there's three guys I really love: CMC, Dalvin, Derrick Henry. Kamara, I'm okay with as my fourth. And then five, I can go any number of ways. I can go Saquon. I could, you know, maybe go Saquon, maybe Zeke, but more than likely Travis Kelce. It's just, it's weird. It's weird right now. Want to talk some real or mirage with you. Some a handful of headlines, you know, opinions out there, and your thoughts on whether like we should really be paying attention to this, or is this just chatter because we got nothing else to talk about? The first one, a story out of New England that Bill Belichick has not completely ruled out a QB platoon. Now, this was before the story about Cam Newton having to be away from the team because of COVID, and that's another question we can get to in just a bit. But you know, let's just assume that week one comes, both he and Mac Jones are ready and available and ready to go for the Patriots. Do you buy this idea that Belichick could go with a platoon at quarterback?
Yes. I've been all summer long putting it out on like Twitter and on SiriusXM saying like, Bill Belichick he loves to be one of the smartest coaches out there, right? And I think he might have looked at what the Colts did last year using Jacoby Brissett near the goal line to just plug in, like rush in those touchdowns. And I've been worried, like, even if they turn to Mac Jones, like we joke around about Sean Payton not caring about our fantasy team. We know Bill Belichick doesn't. And I think I could definitely see this being a situation where like they run an offense similar to what they ran with Tom Brady with Mac Jones, like a lot of short intermediate safe throws, a lot of dump offs to the running backs. But when they get near the goal line and get in the red zone, they could just bring in Cam Newton, because we saw it last year. Like he had, I think it was 19 carries inside the 5 yard line, and the running backs combined didn't even have I think they had 14 altogether, something like that. Like he had more than their entire running backs, because it's just so hard to stop someone with Cam Newton's size taking the snap and directly running. So I am not discounting that this could be a possible situation, and it would be awful for fantasy.
Absolutely awful. And we talked about this with the Saints pretty much all summer long. And now it looks like it could really become a possibility in New England. Obviously, the side note to this story is that Cam is away from the team for most of the week after what's being called a COVID test misunderstanding. while he has not said whether or not he has been vaccinated, the just anecdotally and just sort of watching him suggest that he has not. He's been wearing masks during outdoor practices. You know, the reports are that when he was away for treatment, he had to be tested every single day. So all the signs point to that, which, side note, look, last year we obviously knew we were going to have to be prepared for COVID-related absences. That hasn't really changed this year. And I know it's a thing we haven't talked about a lot, I think, as a community, but I think it's a thing that we need to pay attention to. And whether it's Cam Newton, whether it's Lamar Jackson, whether it's Kirk Cousins, Cole Beasley, you can go down the list of all the guys who have been very vocal or at least very dodgy about their situation. Is this is a thing that we have to pay attention to, certainly as fantasy managers, but as football fans too, because now you're looking at guys who are making decisions that are not helping, not helping themselves, but not helping their team. And I know that the line has been from a lot of these people that this is a personal decision. My pushback on that is that players make a lot of personal decisions that they feel like are in the best interest of the team. If they want to stand there and pretend to be leaders and talk about what they want to do to help the team, this is it. This is sitting down and getting a shot that, you know, millions of people have already gotten in the name of general safety and trying to help people around them. If you aren't willing to help the other 50 some odd guys in your locker room, then you do have to sort of wonder about these guys' commitment to the team. And then just as a side note, it does impact us for fantasy. That's probably the least of it right now. But it is a thing that, you know, is starting to become bothersome. And now as you see some big name guys potentially impacted by this, I feel like it's a thing that, you know, we're going to have to reckon with. But more than that, just get the damn shot, man.
I completely agree. But to put the fantasy spin on it, like, we've already had it like, Gabriel Davis and Cole Beasley now are out for 5 days. If this was in the season, they would be missing a game that week. We've already seen Kirk Cousins and the entire Vikings quarterback room miss a preseason game because of this. We've seen – now we're hearing that the Patriots are annoyed at Cam Newton because of this. Like, and we have heard coaches say, like, yes, there is an advantage to be having a vaccinated player over an unvaccinated player. So that could help impact the roster decisions. I know no superstar player is going to be left off the roster because they're not vaccinated. But, yeah, I think it's hard to quantify, but I'll say this. Like, use it as a tiebreaker at the very least. Like, if you're drafting a QB2 and you're debating between Kirk Cousins and someone else, that could be what pushes you in the direction of someone else.
Yeah. And my last thing on this is Jerry Jones was quoted on a radio interview. But, you know, he says, look, the common good takes over. I'm arm waving here, but that has everything to do with the way I look at our team, the Cowboys, the way I look at our society. We have got to check I at the door and go forward with we. Your Dallas Cowboys are doing that. So, look, man. I know Jared is about his bottom line a lot of times, but this helps everybody, man.
I can't wait for the Hard Knocks episode where they're just all getting the shot.
Right? Just guys lining up and sitting down, you know, getting jabbed in the arm. That'll be riveting television. Last thing on this Patriots thing. Who do you think is going to be the starter week one?
Before this whole COVID thing, and let's say that it's not a big thing, I think Cam Newton starts week one. But I think Mac Jones makes more starts this year. I think Cam Newton gets one more shot to keep the, you know, see what he could do with them. But I don't think this is a Patriots team that, you know, I expect them to compete for a playoff spot. But, like, I think they will go through some rough stretches. Cam did look better in preseason week two. I will give him that. But if he looks anything like last year, I think they turn to Mac Jones.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, this once upon a time, this might have been Cam's job to lose. I don't think that anymore. I think this is a real, real competition between him and Mac Jones. And I'm curious to see how this turns out. All right. That was a long reel or mirage. Didn't expect it to go that long, but OK, on to the next one. We're on to Cincinnati. Ja'Marr Chase could possibly lose snaps to Auden Tate. The drops have been a real story for Ja'Marr Chase the first couple of weeks. But do you think it's bad enough that maybe he becomes a second string receiver in Cincinnati?
I think this is a mirage. And look, all credit. I know you had Ian Horowitz on recently. He loves Auden Tate. And so credit to him. But Auden Tate is a preseason baller. Like every year he goes out in preseason and puts up numbers, makes catches that have us our jaws dropping, and then he kind of just fades away in the regular season. Not saying that's fair to Auden Tate, but they went out and they drafted Ja'Marr Chase fifth overall over offensive lineman, which they needed to address. There's the connection there with Joe Burrow. Plus, this is a Bengals team that, yes, they have a lot of fun, exciting pieces, but I don't expect them to compete this year. And I think realistically, they themselves are looking like, hey, maybe next year could be the year where we could take the jump when Joe Burrow is hopefully fully healthy with this whole knee injury behind him. Let Burrow and Chase and Higgins all grow and develop together. I don't expect Ja'Marr Chase to lose snaps at all. Although I will say, I also have been on the side of Ja'Marr Chase is getting way overdrafted because he's going as a top 20 wide receiver on some sites. And at that price, you're either hoping for a historic rookie season, something like what Justin Jefferson did, or you're drafting him at his absolute ceiling and he can only disappoint.
I feel like the volume is what has everybody interested in Ja'Marr Chase. Just seeing how much the Bengals threw the ball last year. Before he got hurt, Joe Burrow was averaging 40 pass attempts per game, which is just an insane number. But I think a lot of people are expecting that's probably what's going to happen this year. All told, because of the draft price, I don't think I have Ja'Marr Chase in a lot of spots, if at all. I've been perfectly happy sitting back and grabbing Tyler Boyd in the seventh or eighth round and being thrilled with that, expecting that he will probably be in the neighborhood of 100 targets again. He's going to get a whole lot of opportunity, and the draft price just feels a whole lot more better on what's going to be a pretty bad team. So, but all that said, I still think Ja'Marr Chase is going to be on the field a lot, and I'm with you. I don't think that we're going to see Auden Tate out there as a starter. They spent the fifth overall pick, and like you said, they're not going anywhere this year. They sort of know that. Let Chase get his growing pains in. Let him work it out on the field. I think that's probably what's going to happen. Everybody's being coy with their starting quarterbacks, right? I mean, Matt Nagy finally announced that Andy Dalton's his guy. Kyle Shanahan has sort of been hinting around that, you know, he's not ready to announce it just yet, but I think we all sort of agree it's probably going to be Jimmy Garoppolo in week one. And now you got Ron Rivera basically saying that, you know, it's a competition there in Washington, where once we all thought that this was Ryan Fitzpatrick's job, you know, just locked up. The doors open a tiny crack for Taylor Heinicke to maybe be the week one starter. Are you buying that at all?
I am not buying it at all. Look, he played well the other day. I won't take that away from him. But Ryan Fitzy, man, the bearded wonder. First of all, I'm a huge Fitzpatrick fan, so maybe I'm just selfishly rooting for him, especially because I think what he can do for fantasy, for Terry McLaurin and those guys, is better than anything Heinicke can do. But you brought Fitzpatrick here for a reason. Like, this is a team last year that they showed they had all the pieces in place. They just kind of need a quarterback there. And I don't think Fitzpatrick can lift his team to, like, a Super Bowl. But we've seen him go on extended stretches where he can play really well. And they don't really need a superstar quarterback to win this division, I don't think. I'm just expecting it to be Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think they brought him in for a reason. Although I will say, Heinicke, if anything happens to Fitz, like if he goes through one of those low points where they bench him or if he gets injured or anything, Heinicke is kind of like Fitzpatrick 2.0 to me. Like, he has a strong arm. He's just going to look downfield and throw it up. He's not afraid of to throw an interception or anything like that. And he's a little bit more mobile than he gets credit for. So I think either way, having a backup like that makes me less worried about like McLaurin, because we saw last year when there was a quarterback change, his value really took a hit.
I think that's maybe the key point there, right? Just because there aren't a lot of people drafting Fitzpatrick, you know, outside of Superflex or two QB leagues or anything like that. He's just not getting that much attention in drafts, but we all love him because of what he means for all the pieces around him, for what he means for Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, whenever we can get him back on the field. Which, side note, how do you feel about Logan Thomas this year? Because I'm starting to buy in a little bit on Logan Thomas right now.
I went from being completely like, I'm not going to pay a price for him, to warm it. Like, he is my tight end 7 in rankings. Mm-hmm. I don't have a bunch of him because I just tend to wait on the position, but I've been on Curtis Samuel, and the longer he is out and the more volume that we're seeing Logan Thomas get, the more that's kind of shifting a little bit for me.
Yeah, no, I don't have a lot of Logan Thomas because I've gone the other end where I'm just grabbing elite guys early. But there have been a couple times where I couldn't get one of those top three guys, and I felt okay about drafting Logan Thomas sort of in the middle to late rounds. Anyway, Fitz is probably gonna be the starter week one, but if for whatever reason he goes Fitz on us and we see Taylor Heinicke, maybe we don't have to panic quite as much about all the other ancillary pieces around him in the offense. All right, last reel or mirage. It wasn't all that long ago that there was a lot of weeping and gnashing of teeth in Indianapolis and in fantasy circles because Carson Wentz was dealing with an injury that was going to keep him out in that handy sum of 5 to 12 weeks, which I still can't quite wrap my head around. But anyway, it appears that things are on the up and up in Indianapolis, and Wentz is back working out with the team. People are surprised at how his progress has been, and there's talk that he could be the starter in week one. Real or mirage, we're going to see Carson Wentz under center for the Colts when they start the regular season.
I'm saying real. The Colts have been very optimistic since Wentz and Nelson had the same weird foot injury one day apart. It was such a strange occurrence, but since then they've been saying like, hey, 5 to 12 weeks, we expect it to be on the shorter end of that. Maybe miss a couple of games, but they never really said that his season or even much of his season was in jeopardy. He's back out there on the practice field. I know this is the last week of preseason and it feels like the season is right around the corner, but we still have 2.5 weeks to go for Carson Wentz to get acclimated. So I think he'll be out there. I'm not too interested in Wentz himself for fantasy, but I think obviously Wentz being out there rather than their backups helps Michael Pittman. It helps Paris Campbell, T.Y. Hilton, if you're going deep on them. And I really think it helps Jonathan Taylor as well.
I came into this offseason sort of believing that Wentz could be resurrected, going to Indianapolis behind that offensive line with Frank Reich. More than anything, though, it did give me confidence about Michael Pittman. It even, you know, talking to Eric Moody, he sort of pumped me up about T.Y. Hilton even a little bit. You know, again, not outside the very late rounds, but enough to sort of believe that T.Y. Hilton might have one last little bit of something there. I haven't quite gotten back on the Wentz train with all these reports, but it does make me feel a little bit better about, as you mentioned, the wide receivers, about Jonathan Taylor. And you know, kind of makes me think, okay, maybe there's something here that we thought about back in the spring and early part of the summer. That leads me to a running back edition of Higher or Lower. The last time we had you on this show, it was near the end of May. And look, I know how you feel about certain guys. So I put together a list of 5 running backs to get your thoughts on where you are on these guys now versus where you were, say, a couple of months ago. And the first one is the aforementioned Jonathan Taylor, because from the jump, I mean, you have been all about Taylor early in the first round. I feel like his ADP has fluctuated all throughout the summer, especially on the Carson Wentz news. So as we sit here on August 24th doing this show, how do you feel about Jonathan Taylor versus where you were, say, a couple months ago?
So versus a couple months ago, I'm kind of the same, but versus a couple of weeks ago, I'm definitely higher. Like when the Wentz and Nelson injury news came out, I was like, even me, a bullish Jonathan Taylor supporter, was like, all right, I can't take him in the middle of the first round. Maybe, you know, back end of the first round is fine. But like sixth overall was a little bit tough to justify. I'm back now. Like I'll take him fifth, sixth overall again, because I think that the O-line being healthy, like Kelly has also returned to practice. So like that is huge. And I think with Carson Wentz dealing with this foot injury, what it could lead to is him running a little bit less, because that's a part of Wentz's game that wasn't a part of Phillip Rivers' game, right? Like he'll feel that pressure and he's not afraid to roll out, scramble a little bit. But with that, this foot injury now, maybe his first thought instead of rolling out is, hey, where's my running back? Let me just dump it off real quick. So I think that Jonathan Taylor could still see a good amount of volume. I think he will see a lot of volume, but I think he could be utilized more in the passing game than his detractors want to give him credit for. And just on the ground, he's running behind one of the best O-lines in football. And I think he's one of the best pure runners in football. So I'm very bullish on Jonathan Taylor still.
Yeah, I don't worry about Jonathan Taylor's pass catching ability anymore. I felt like we learned last year that he can do that. And it, you know, it was the thing that I always said, just because you've never seen a guy do something doesn't mean he can't do it. He didn't do it at Wisconsin because that's just not how their offense was. But I felt like he did a very good job of it. My, I guess, only real worry is I just don't know what they're going to do with the running backs behind him. You know, what happens with Nyheim Hines? You know, is Marlon Mack fully healthy and do they try to work him in? You know, I was reminded recently that, you know, we had Jordan Wilkins games last year and people freaked out over that sort of thing. So that's the only reason I have any real concern about Jonathan Taylor. Otherwise, the volume is going to be there. And I do think a late first round ADP is pretty reasonable for Jonathan Taylor, all things considered there.
The one thing, the thing with the running backs, I completely agree it is a concern with Hines and Mack looking like he never tore his Achilles. But last year, Jonathan Taylor played like 40% of the season snaps and still finished as a top 10 running back.
Yeah. No, I love what he can do. I just, you know, I want Frank Reich to personally email me and give me some clarity.
Tell me how every week. Tell us what the snap distribution is going to be.
Yeah. Just, you know, hit me up, Frank. You know, just, you know, email something, call. It doesn't matter. We'll work it out. The other guy that I know you love is Austin Ekeler. And I feel like the consensus ADP on him has sort of stayed the same, but I think the disagreement is about the range of outcomes for Austin Ekeler. I know you are very high on him. Has your opinion changed at all in the last few months?
No, I have been high on him since the start of last season. And I will say it was a lot more fun last year being an Austin Ekeler supporter when a lot of people were off of him compared to this year, where like it feels like almost everyone is like, yeah, Austin Eckler's going to be really good this year. It's just not as fun. But the reason I love Ekeler is last year in games where he stayed healthy and Justin Herbert played. So take away the first game with Tyrod Taylor. He averaged nearly 8 targets per game and almost 7 catches per game. Both would have led the running back position. And he was giving you over 19 fantasy points per game. That would have been the RB6 on the year. And in the last 2 years as a whole, he's the RB6 in points per game. So for him to be a top 5 back, he just seems to be a little bit, basically just as good as he's been. And I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. And Marcus, you just said something that you say a lot is just because a player hasn't done something or been asked to do something doesn't mean they can't. And I am applying that rule to Austin Ekeler. Just because they had Melvin Gordon before and last year was a weird year where he tore his hamstring early on and they didn't ask him to be utilized near the goal line, I don't think that means he can't be a back that is used within the 5-yard line. Like, I don't anticipate them, you know, on an obvious first and goal at the 1 to bring in Austin Ekeler and try to hammer that one in. But teams need – they don't know what the Chargers are going to do when Austin Eckler's out there. They can't stack the box really against him because he's such a great route runner. So, you know, if you're on the 4 or the 5, I think you could still bring in Austin Ekeler. And I just want to throw this out there. In his career, smaller sample size, he has turned 37% of his touches inside the 5-yard line into touchdowns, which is a higher number than Nick Chubb, Josh Jacobs, Joe Mixon, Saquon Barkley, guys that we don't worry about at all converting those touches into touchdowns. So I'm not saying he is going to get these touches, and if he doesn't, I'll be worried. But if he does, and I think it is in the realm of possibility, I think that he can go on a run and maybe even be the RB1, because then you're getting Christian McCaffrey-like production, a great runner, a really good receiver, and maybe even some, you know, 8 to 10 touchdowns, something like that.
Ekeler is one of my dark horses to finish as the RB1 this season. Also, I think you just struck a blow to the handful of Larry Roundtree truthers that are out there. I don't think there are many of them, but they probably do exist. If you look hard enough, I'm sure you could probably find some somewhere out there.
Josh Kelly had a whole hive of people supporting him last year.
Look, I admit, like after the first week or two of the season, I was starting to become a believer with the way they were using him and the way he played in those first couple games. And then it all sort of fell apart. And I think everybody sort of jumped off that bandwagon at this point. Najee Harris, who we obviously all loved in the draft, I feel like he has steadily been moving up the ADP board as we've gone all throughout the offseason. Again, I know you liked him. Do you like him more now after we've seen him in a couple of preseason games?
Yeah, I do. I'm definitely higher on him than I was 2 months ago. Like, giving credit where it's due. Really good friend of yours, friend of the show, James Coe, on draft night was saying, like, he is an RB1, should go at the end of the first round. And I was like, all right, if that's the cost, I'm probably not going to have any Najee Harris this year. I had him more as a high-end RB2. But seeing him dominate snaps with the starters, seeing him get a lot of carries, and, you know, they're targeting him. They're throwing him the ball. Big Ben was throwing him the ball the other day. He broke out that 40-plus yard catch. I have now moved him up. He is a low-end RB1 for me. I like him a lot more if you could get him in round two than in round one. But I have, if like I'm on the turn, like 12, 13, like I have taken him on that turn. So I've definitely increased my his ranking, and I've come around on Najee Harris.
I did the same thing where I took him at that 12, 13 turn. And again, it's the weird mental thing I do where I purposely took him at 13 instead of 12 to say that I got him in the second round. I know it doesn't really matter, but in my head it does. So that's why I do that.
I will add one spot that matters is in keeper leagues. Like, if you're in a keeper league, take the guy that has the upside of being a better player next year, take him with that second pick on the turn, not the first.
That's a good point. This was not that, but you know, this is just my own.
It's fun.
Exactly. It's just my own thing.
It's more fun to say, hey, if he breaks out, say I got him in round two.
I got him in the second round. You know, somebody got his first round pick, I got him in round two. So that's what I did. I recently did a TikTok where I said Myles Gaskin was a guy that you are drafting too high, because this came after Brian Flores made a comment that they have three guys that they want to use situationally. I didn't get a ton of pushback, but there were a few folks that sort of questioned that. And then Myles Gaskin went out and sort of balled in preseason week two. So now I am all turned around about what to think about Myles Gaskin. How do you feel about Myles Gaskin now versus, say, end of May?
Very similar to you, because I lowered him into like RB3 territory after that first preseason game. And I was saying, like, yeah, I do not want any part of Myles Gaskin. And then preseason week two, like, not only was he the starter, like, he dominated the touches early on. They were throwing to him. He scored two touchdowns. I kind of think I'm settling on him where I originally had him, which is a low-end RB2 that does have some more upside, like in the same range for me as like a Mike Davis. Like, I have those two very close, and I think that's kind of where I'm going to settle on Gaskin.
I think that's kind of where I am too. Like, I think after all the ups and downs and rounds, we probably had it right at the beginning, and we just let information overload sort of cloud our judgment. I still think we're going to see Savon Ahmed sort of work in there. We're going to see some other guys. I know Malcolm Brown right now is the smasher of fantasy dreams, and we may see him get some work in there. But, you know, like I said, after Flores made the comment about using three backs to go out and see Gaskin play as well as he did in the preseason, you know, it gave me reason to think and sort of reevaluate what I had previously
been thinking. Still just a little worried that Brown is the new Jordan Howard, like you said.
Oh, man. Which Jordan Howard is still on, at least as of, you know, this morning, I think, last I checked, he was still on the Eagles roster.
Jordan Howard is the new Jordan Howard now.
He is. It's just, man, I'm curious to see whether or not he makes it through the entire preseason, if he ends up on the regular season roster. But he's still there for now, so I don't know.
If he doesn't, he'll end up in like LA or something like that and steal it. Like, he's always going to be a thorn in someone's side, it feels like.
I mean, look, Daryl Henderson has a thumb injury. You know, I know they're saying he'll be there for week one, but if you're Sean McVay, do you go out and get some insurance just in case?
I'm rooting for the Rams to bring Todd Gurley home. That's what I want to see.
Time is a flat circle. Todd Gurley comes back to Los Angeles. That'd be great. All right. My last one here is David Montgomery, who has become something of a hype bunny, I think, over the last few weeks. I think people were sort of meh on him. But I have sensed a steady fantasy community drumbeat about David Montgomery and starting to draft him a little bit higher. Have you been a part of that, or are you still just kind of meh on him?
Yeah, I'm definitely higher on him. It was about a month ago, or maybe a little bit over a month ago now, I started to realize that I was too low on Montgomery. I was holding things against him. I expected the opposite. Like, I thought people were going to be really hyping up Montgomery, and I was going to be like, no. But it was kind of the opposite of that. Like, he was going outside the top 20 running backs, or borderline top 20 running back. And I was looking at it like, hey, I can't be the guy hyping up Jonathan Taylor and what he did at the end of the season against a very favorable schedule. Hold that against David Montgomery. So I especially with Tariq Cohen being slow to come back, and Damian Williams is a good back, but I don't think he is the threat in the passing game that a Tariq Cohen was. So I think Montgomery is, I mean, a Nagy every chance he gets says he wants to give this guy 20 touches a week. I have raised him. He's still an RB2 for me, but I have him ahead of Chris Carson now. Like, those two guys are my RB2 targets because you could get them in like the third, and Carson's been going in the fourth round lately. I don't get that at all. Right. But I have them ahead of, like, for me at least, ahead of like J.K. Dobbins, Josh Jacobs, Miles Sanders, stuff like that. So I really warmed up on David Montgomery, and he's actually approaching my top 15 running backs now.
Yeah, I've been drafting Montgomery in a lot of spots lately, and you know, everybody talked about that schedule at the end of the year, and how one, hey, look, he took advantage of it, right? There are plenty of times we look at a guy and says, hey, he's really favorable schedule, and then they don't do anything with it. So credit to Montgomery for actually taking advantage of that schedule, and then throw in the fact that at least on paper, the schedule looks pretty good again this year. That may change. We may see a couple of defenses that are better than we anticipated, but at least for now, with what we have to go on, schedule still looks pretty good. And as you mentioned, no Tariq Cohen. We saw last year Montgomery catch the ball very effectively. And let's keep in mind, he's only going into his third season. I know it feels like we've talked about him a lot, like he's been around forever. Like, this is year three for him. So maybe we can expect him to continue to improve and do more work there. So I'm fully on board the David Montgomery train.
I think people made up their mind on Montgomery after his rookie season, mm-hmm. and they can't get past that. Especially, like, you know, that graphic that we always joke around about. Like, that doesn't help. Yeah, like, I think a lot of people were just like, this guy stinks, and like they've kind of just had their mind made up.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was big on him his rookie year. There it is, right on cue. I love that Justin just has it. He just has it, like, locked and loaded and everything. Yeah, I love
that the athleticism they went with is Sony Michel, the least athletic of those running backs.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of him his rookie year. And, like, I don't think he was terrible. He was just like, eh. And I just think, you know, again, he was sort of victim of expectations. And then last year he started to pick it up. And now this year, I think there are bigger and better things coming for him. Real quick, I got a bonus one for you because I just saw this kind of come across my Twitter timeline. Dan Campbell says he is worried about DeAndre Swift's conditioning as he's coming back. He's been one that I have stayed away from. I don't know if you have a different level of excitement about him. I can't quite get behind it, but I don't know how you feel right now.
I mean, you know, last season I loved DeAndre Swift and I was all about him. But this year I've been avoiding him. I don't really have much at all. I think I'm going to have him in a keeper league, but that's because I could keep him in like the sixth round. But they're saying not only his conditioning and not only was like injuries a concern for him last year, but he's dealing with an injury now. And they're saying week one could be in question for him. So I don't have a lot of DeAndre Swift, but Justin will like this. I have a lot of Jamal Williams. I think Jamal Williams is like an RB4 is a really good pick because I think he's going to be utilized more than we give him credit for. And if Swift goes down, Jamal Williams, I think, becomes an RB2 right away.
I have looked at DeAndre Swift and J.K. Dobbins similarly in the sense that I've spent more time drafting Jamal Williams and Gus Edwards. Like, I just have. I think same. Both of those guys are going to get pretty significant workloads. As you mentioned, if the guy in front of them goes down, then they're going to eat. And both of them can be had anywhere from 6 to 8 rounds later. So that has sort of been my process when it comes to those two top running backs in those two places. So, dude, it's good to have you back. I'm glad.
It was good to be back. It flew by. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully you all enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoy putting it out, because this is going to be our life for the next few weeks, next few months, I should say, twice a week. We'll also be just a programming note. I know at some point in the near future, we'll probably be moving these from Tuesday to Thursday to Monday and Wednesday. We'll let you know kind of when that happens, but sort of be on the lookout for that. In the meantime, for us, that is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, do one-legged ducks swim in circles? Be safe, take care of yourselves, get vaccinated, and we'll see you on Thursday.